and welcome to another edition of Soundography, a crash course in music, one band at a time. My name is Brian Ibbett.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
And we are talking today about, I guess, you know, I hate to say it, but I think these guys fall into the truly one-hit wonder realm.
They do. They really, really do. After listening, they really
and
do.
It's a great hit. The band we're talking about today is The Outfield. It does have a "the." So
good follow-up from last week.
I know that, like, people who are listening to these, like, who are binging on Soundography, think that that just was like wrapped up one show, started the next. No, we had a whole week to forget about the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones, or Mighty Mighty Boss Tones? The Mighty Mighty. Anyway, we have a whole week to forget about that whole discussion and get into The Outfield. And indeed, they are a The band. It's right there in their the title, their album cover artwork. So The Outfield, probably best known for one very good, very specific single, and I actually say it's a travesty that they're not known for more.
I will say that I agree with you 75%. And I will.
Oh, man, I can't wait to find out why.
I will justify it. I mean, and people can agree with me or disagree with me, but I do think it's a travesty that they aren't known for more than just that song. However, mm-hmm. I don't know if they had that in them, musical diversity wise, mm-hmm. to be bigger than that one song was.
Sure. Okay. Oh, good. This will be a fun one to get into.
Yeah.
So for this episode, of course, we listened. We went through, as we always do, went through the entire library of Outfield albums. And there are, I mean, when you don't count singles and two or three greatest hits collections, there's what, seven albums?
Yeah, something like that. It was three, pretty four, easy five, considering
six, seven, what we, eight, nine albums.
Considering what we typically do, it's pretty. Yeah. This was pretty easy.
It did feel like it went really fast compared to things like New Order and Mushroom Head.
But Brian, everything.
Especially Mushroom Head.
I was going to say, everything is going to feel faster than for the Mushroom Head for you. We could listen to Zappa again.
With the exception of one band that I'm sure is somewhere out on the horizon that does like 9-minute songs, I'm sure that everybody else is going to be a feel faster than Mushroom Head.
Yeah. But that's just because you started at a place of grudgery.
Oh, with Mushroom Head?
Yeah. If you started with a place of love, it would have been better.
No, I do like I do with all bands. I start from a plateau of
you can't say neutrality, because
neutrality. Oh, for sure. Well, all right, maybe I didn't come into Spice Girls with zero neutrality.
Yeah, exactly.
Or 100% neutrality, I guess is the thing. All right, well, we're talking about The Outfield. The band members are Tony Lewis on bass and vocals, John Spinks, there's no H in there, it's not Sphinx, it's Spinks on guitars and keys, and Alan Jackman on drums.
Hugh's little brother.
Hugh Jackman's little brother is Alan Jackman?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Sure. They are based out of London, which...
We got to make him interesting somehow.
Well, so based out of London, which right off the bat surprised me, because I thought, you know, baseball, the stuff, and they've got to be an American band. No, I was really surprised to find out that that they are a British band.
Well, it was interesting. I thought they were an American band too. But based on listening this time around, there are like two or three bands that are so clearly influences. Mm-hmm. And they're all British bands, that
for sure.
It was pretty clear that they were a very much a UK band when I was done. I mean, there was no question just based on influences alone.
Right. All right. So three main members that I mentioned earlier, they started playing together in the late 70s in a power pop band called Sirius B.
Sounds like something right up your alley too. A 70s
totally
power
does.
Pop band.
Oh, I love power pop. Yeah. And so I was surprised to hear about that. Their style wasn't in line with the growing punk rock scene at the time in the UK, but they did experience huge commercial success in the US, but never really that much success back in the UK. They started recording.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, if they focused themselves more of a soccer themed band, it might've worked better for them. Or even right. A cricket themed band. Yeah.
Cricket. Is there an outfield in cricket? There's gotta be, right?
I would assume so.
Yeah. Maybe they only call it the outfield though. They start recording in the mid-80s. Originally, they called themselves the Baseball Boys, and that was pulled from the Baseball Furies in the Warriors, the gang that dressed in Yankees outfits, carrying baseball bats. And
I love the Warriors for their theme gangs, but I did realize when I was doing the notes the first time that I actually typed it, the Baseball Furries, which changes it to a far less threatening gang in the Warriors movie.
Totally. They all look like mascots, basically. Yeah. they signed with Columbia Records in 1984, and they had a reputation for being very American sounding, for sure. I mean, you and I both said it. Their manager had them change their name to The Outfield because John Spinks was a fan of, yeah, you guessed it, baseball.
So I will say this now to kind of go back to our travesty that they're not known for more in my qualification. Mm-hmm. There are basically two different styles of the outfield. There's rockin' outfield, which is this mid-tempo kind of upbeat harmony,
yeah,
almost good driving music. And then you have the ballad outfield, which is lots of harmonies, real slow, real like heart pulling kind of ballads.
Every time you cry.
Yeah. There is no middle ground, and they never accelerate beyond that kind of mid-tempo rockin' outfield. And they never go into anything more than that mid-tempo kind of pop ballad world. There are two flavors of it. And after about three albums, I realized this is all we're getting from the outfield.
Yeah, I'm not going to disagree with that. I think that they like you said, they do a couple things really, really well. Mm-hmm. And they don't venture too far out of that. It's almost like they establish a really, really detailed plexiglass mask or plexiglass shell. And then everything they do, you know, fills up that shell all the way to the max, but it never breaks out of that shell.
Yeah. And and I'm not knocking them. There are lots of songs that aren't hits that I truly love. And mm-hmm. some of them I thought I loved more than I thought I do, just based mm-hmm. on time. And we'll get to that in a little bit. But I was surprised at just how, I think it almost feels like they hit, okay, their big hit, Josie's on a Vacation, that one.
Yeah, Your Love.
Your right? Love, yes. It's mm-hmm. like someone said, okay, Your Love is it. This is what you need to keep repeating. And every single song after that, they seem to be trying to recapture that magic.
Yeah, there is something to that. There is a, you know, like you kind of wonder if the producer said, do what you do really well. Don't worry about trying to go outside of that. And, cause we'll make the money. As long as you keep churning out stuff like Your Love, then we'll keep it up. It's funny because that actually wasn't the initial single release from Play Deep. The first album, 1985, Play Deep, Say It Isn't So was released as the first single from that album.
And again, it's a really good song, and I'm surprised it mm-hmm. wasn't a bigger hit.
Your Love followed that huge hit. It's funny. Say It Isn't So was released on Halloween 1985. Your Love was released on Valentine's Day 1986.
Well, at least the people releasing the singles knew what they were doing.
I think so, exactly. Also, a couple other singles, All the Love and Every Time You Cry, released as a single as well. Say It Isn't So made it up to 18 on the mainstream rock tracks on Billboard. Your Love, of course, made it to number 6 on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100. All the Love made it all the way up to 19, so maybe you can't really call them a one-hit wonder band, because top 20, right?
Yeah, but when you think about...
Or top 40, right? When, is what you,
okay, so maybe it's the one album, because like I stumbled on the third album completely by accident, and that ended up being the one that I had the most familiarity with.
Sure. The album itself reached number 9 on the Billboard charts. It went triple platinum in the U.S. The song Your Love was featured on a number of 80s compilations and collections. Seems like it is everywhere, right? Yeah. And I remember, the dude from The Hunger Games, whose name I'm completely drawing a blank on, did a skit where he lip-synced the song for on SNL on Saturday Night Live, and I'm trying to remember the guy's name.
Woody Harrelson?
No. that would be great, actually. I'd like to see that. No, it was the guy who played PETA.
Oh, the bread guy?
The bread guy, PETA bread guy.
He was the bread guy. He worked at a bakery.
Sure. Oh, he was. Yeah, PETA bread. Oh, my God. How come I never made that connection before? How did I miss that? Oh, crazy. Anyway, over 1,000 covers of the song. I have about a dozen. Katy Perry actually did a really good cover of it. She's the only person who didn't call it Your Love. She called it Use Your Love. And it kind of drives me nuts when people cover a song and they change the title. Because they think it's going to be a little bit more recognizable.
Yeah.
Or it's just them not really paying attention, or the producers putting it on a album title and not making it, not being better about it. Faye Wolf did a cover of it for the Pretty Little Liars soundtrack that I think is actually really good. That's the one I've got marked in here as a favorite.
One of the things that I noticed on this album that I didn't notice the when I was listening to it in 85 was there was a lot of in excess guitar noises that came through. Kind of the kick era in excess guitar noises came through. And I was really surprised at hearing that.
Like the Need You Tonight.
Yep.
Yeah. Right. I did. Now that you say that, I kind of can see that. Everything on the album written by John Spinks and they followed it with a tour. They toured for actually opening for Journey and Starship. Feels appropriate.
It does, especially in 85 with the Built the City Starship.
Oh, yeah. Poor guys. That might not help things either for them, honestly.
One thing I can say is that these guys really, really do pay attention to the harmonies. And sometimes they did some really interesting things with them. And that goes through all the albums, through Good and Bad. Sometimes they hit some really interesting things with the harmonies, which I was really impressed with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that, that after the first album, you start seeing, almost like a John Anderson, harmony kind of quality, I don't know who John Anderson did harmonies with in Yes, if it was Bruford, Wakeman, Howe, or
any of the other hundreds of members of people who've been in Yes.
Exactly. But there was tight harmonies, and especially the 90125 era Yes stuff.
Yep.
Very felt like it was a big influence on these guys.
Hey, look at my note on 1992's Rock Eye.
Oh, do you mention that? Oh, look at that. 90125. Yeah. Okay. So second album, their follow-up was 1987's Bangin'.
All right. Before you go any further, when you title an album Bangin', You better have some on there. And you this was the least banging album ever.
Yeah, it's true. No Surrender, Banging on My Heart, to the single Since You've Been Gone, the big, that was a top 40 hit as well. So yeah, already.
But nothing is enduring. Okay. So they might have had more songs crack the top 10. Just been fooling around since you've been gone. This world's been turned upside down. Didn't think I'd find a girl that I could. The top 40. But
the top 40, yeah.
But none of them were enduring hits.
Was it just because Your Love was such a big hit that we didn't notice these other ones? Or because it was a massive hit.
Yeah, it was.
And it's funny because I was really surprised it wasn't a number one single because of how much airplay and how many times it's been included in 80s soundtracks and compilations and things like that.
It's cheap to get licensing for.
Oh, maybe. Yeah.
Just saying.
Sure. So the album, Bangin', was in the top 20 singles chart, like you said, in the top 40. But they started losing their audience around this time and lost a portion of it by the third album. This album was certified gold, and after wrapping up tours with Journey and Starship, they did the next best thing and toured with Night Ranger Bangin'.
And I'm sure that was during, well, let's see, 87. So it would be just, no, Sister Christian was 80 earlier.
Yeah, but still, no doubt that that was still.
Yeah, that's speaking of Stairway to Heaven songs.
That's right, exactly. Moving on to the next album, Voices of Babylon. And even their album covers at the time, and I guess, again, maybe it was everybody at the time had a similar kind of look to their album covers. And I was trying to figure out if this was some sort of code on their album cover,
I
right?
I think it is. I think it is. I think I read somewhere that they had found some sort of code, and it says in the code Voices of Babylon or something along those lines.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's the pig pen cipher. Yes, so what you do is you create like a tic-tac-toe grid, and you put in the letters A, B, C, D right into each of the squares, and you do that whatever, three times to get your 26 letters. Your last tic-tac-toe grid will be somewhat empty. And then you can put dots and things like that to signify the second tic-tac-toe grid or the third tic-tac-toe grid. And looking at it does spell the outfield.
Yep.
Interesting. Okay.
But it did remind me like a Police album cover.
Oh yeah. Right. Right. That's right. The Police, right around the synchronicity and the end. Ghost in the Machine kind of had that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Had the characters, keyboard characters and stuff on there. Third album, again, like I said, Voices of Babylon. My Paradise was a mid-sized hit. The title track was a top 25 song. But it still wasn't enough to kind of keep them in the limelight. Their popularity continued to slide. Drummer Alan Jackman left to go pursue change his name to Hugh and pursue his Hollywood career.
He gripped you, Wolverine.
Exactly. Was that good?
Yeah. Perfect.
it was also their last album with Columbia.
Yeah.
They brought in Paul Reed as a replacement for the tour. Replacing Alan Jackman. And again, John Spinks, primary songwriting duties on the album.
Yep.
Followed that album in 1990 with Diamond Days, recorded as a duo, just Tony and John. And they moved to MCA Records. For You, the third song on the album, was a top 30 hit. One Hot Country was on the soundtrack to the film If Looks Could Kill.
This is the album that I realized that I thought I loved more than I do. This is the one where I had a musical nostalgia disorder.
I could see that because there's you and I each picked a song from this album for our top five, but I think on the whole,
I picked two.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. But on the whole, I don't think it's as strong an album as the albums before it.
Well, what I did like about it is there was some musical diversity in it. Mm-hmm. And I think a great example is the John Lennon song, which really leans heavily on the Beatles sound.
It does. And it bounces around between different
eras.
Eras and time signatures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like it's a suite as opposed to a single song.
Yeah. And then also this has one of the most racist songs we've covered since the Spice Girls.
Oh, gosh, which one?
Magic Seed. Read the first lyric.
All right, hold on. Pulling it up. Oh, geez. Yeah, right there, the first two words.
Yeah, they scream it. Yeah, they scream it at the first lyric of the song.
Wow. I didn't catch that at all. You know, looking at these lyrics, you could almost sing this to the melody of Hey Bulldog by the Beatles.
I'm sure that consciously or unconsciously it was done.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, it's too bad. For as much as I really liked Unrespectable, I'm kind of giving a spoiler as to one of my choices for the for my top five. And I would have included John Lennon in mine had I not seen it in yours, but I did the next best thing, and we'll talk about that when we get to it.
Yeah.
But for, like you said, for an album with a couple really good tracks on it, the rest of it really does kind of fall flat.
And this is really the first time since we've been doing the show where my memories of an album actually were misleading me going in.
Sure.
Most of the time when I've said, oh yeah, I love this album when I was in high school or whatever, I still do. And there's a lot of real built-in love for it. But this was the first time where I actually realized that this album didn't hold up and the songs were not as good as I remembered them.
Mm-hmm. Did you, had you been buying their albums?
No, I think I'm not even sure how it happened, but I knew The Greatest, their big hit. And then I remember I was at a record store one day and they were selling cassette store or whatever it was, music store. And I bought the cassette for Diamond Days and I put it in the cassette player in my truck and it lived there for like a month. Mm. And I grew to it kind of was a soundtrack of my day, just driving around with that thing in my car.
Oh, and that's awesome.
Some of those songs I have very vivid, fond memories of. And it's interesting that the memory is not as tied to the music as the memory itself. Mm-hmm. When I was listening this time around, I still knew all the words. I still, all that stuff. But I saw all the flaws this time. And I'm not sure it's because I'm doing the show or if because the album truly didn't hold up.
Sure. Well, yeah, we are for this listening with a more critical eye, I think.
We're listening with our eyes? How are you doing that?
A critical ear. All right, fine. Look with your eyes, not with your hands. Next album was 1992's Rock Eye. They started moving more towards an arena sound and prog rock.
Okay.
What's that?
Okay. When I read the note that said they were shifting more toward arena and prog rock, I'm like,
yeah.
Yes, I can get into this.
Specifically, yes.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, yeah. And I was really, really excited. And when I started listening to it, there's a lot of 90125 to dig into, but it was more like it was run through a Foreigner filter.
Interesting. I didn't catch that, or I didn't feel like that. For me, this album, and really all the stuff moving forward from here, definitely fit into we're big influenced by Yes. We really like their sound. We want to do that sort of thing.
And I'm not knocking
that the producer was the same. I totally would believe you.
Oh yeah. And I'm not knocking it. I mean, they wore that mantle, but it was always a little bit Yes light.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Still performing as a duo, but bringing in a few people for things like drums, sax, piano, stuff like that, but still really performing and writing, primarily John Spinks writing and Tony Lewis contributing some writing on one of the tracks. What else do we have? Close to Me was the lead single, and it came close to the top 40, only made it up to 43. So really no hit singles from this album, although it still was well received. Part of that might have been because of the song Winning It All, which was used for the NBA Finals, the 1992 Olympics, the film Mighty Ducks, and gained a little more traction for that. And NBC used it widely from 92 to 96.
Once again, probably cheap licensing.
Could be, yeah, exactly.
That's a long time to hold on to a song for sporting events.
It really, really does. Yeah, 4 years. Going Back actually became a hit single in South Africa on adult contemporary radio, for whatever that's worth. They started touring again a few years after this album, so big hiatus between 92 and 98, but they started touring again and mostly took the hiatus because of the rise of grunge music.
Which they are the anti-grunge.
They are so not grungy. They are so produced and tight and, again, harmonized and all that stuff.
They're the Mr. Clean.
Right. The anti-Nirvana. the Unsound Garden.
They are peanut butter instead of Pearl Jam.
That's right. They went back home, back to the UK, and played in local pubs. And it's funny because they were so huge in the US, going back and playing these pub gigs, a lot of the people there didn't realize what huge successes they were overseas. So they're seeing some pub band.
That pub band sure knows how to play Save All Your Love.
Save All Your Love.
Not Save All Your Love.
Just Your Love.
Your Love. Sorry. Save All Your Love's great.
Don't Katy Perry
the
album.
No, Save All Your Love is Great White.
Right. Well done. They followed that up with a greatest hits album called Playing the Field. Clever.
Yeah. So my wife and I spent more than our fair share of time making up album titles for them that never were going to get made, like Rounding Third, Stealing Home.
Right.
You know, tagging up.
A collection of B-sides called Foul Plays.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. Nice work.
Thanks. Thanks. Then they followed that up with Big Innings again, you know, carrying the same thing, a fan club only release called It Ain't Over,
which I couldn't find any samples of anywhere.
No. And, it's one of these things too, that you look at these song titles, they're notorious for this. At least I felt like they were notorious for this. A lot of their song titles look like, oh, I'll bet that's a cover. Right. So like you look at, let's see here. Let's go back to Rock Eye and Young Love. God, that seems like it's a cover. Mm-hmm. Take Me Home. Oh, yeah. Phil Collins had a song like that right around this time. I wonder if they're covering that. Jane. Oh, I wonder if they're covering Jefferson Starship. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So,
no, none of these are covers. I was really surprised to not see any covers along any of these albums. But it makes me wonder if this fan club release, which has a song called Dance the Night Away, Kiss the Rain, you know, all of these seem like they would be.
I just don't see them covering Van Halen.
Oh, but if they're going to do it, Dance the Night Away is a.
That's about as good as they could get, maybe other than like exactly. Ice Cream Man.
The poppiest, right, the poppiest of Van Halen tracks. However, they did end up releasing a lot of this stuff on their next album, which was called Extra Innings. I think 11 of the 15 tracks were from It Ain't Over, and then they did 4 new tracks to go along with it.
Yeah.
And so when you do want to listen to Dance the Night Away and see that it's not a Van Halen cover, you just go over to Extra Innings, and that's got all the stuff from the fan club release. They followed that up with a 2001 live album, Live in Brazil, which was labeled as the limited edition official bootleg. I hope that increased.
That made it seem like it was on the sly.
That's right. Well, it was only released via the website, via the Outfield's website, and it was called an official bootleg. But it, you know, it was it's all. All old songs. And then 4 years later, The Outfield Live, another live album.
I'm surprised they didn't make one called, like an all request album called If You Build It, We Will Come.
No, there you see. Perfect. There's so many, so many of these. That one, The Outfield Live, was actually released as a free download in 2005 from their website. So
they've really embraced the website releases and digital extras and all that kind of stuff. Once that kind of turned into a thing they could use. Right. They really did go directly to their fan base, which is pretty respectable.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. By the way, they, in their tours and their concerts, they would cover Oasis's Wonderwall and Led Zeppelin's Rock and Roll. However, not included even on the special bonus track edition of the Outfield Live. So you've got to, you apparently have to do some hunting around to find the those two Outfield covers.
And you cannot color me surprised at all that they're covering Wonderwall.
No, that does. Well, it seems like it's a lower register than you typically get with Tony Lewis's voice.
Yeah, but it just,
he's got a very high register, and that seems like.
Yeah, but just the way that song is written.
Yeah.
It easily could be an Outfield song.
And here it said right here, Wonderwall with John Spinks on lead vocals. And he does take some lead vocal duties two or three times per album. It's primarily Tony on lead vocals, but you do get John Spinks doing, like I said, two or three songs per album, doing some vocals.
Yeah.
I now have a couple covers I need to hunt down. Great. Perfect. In 2006, they released the album Anytime Now. Two different versions they released, a 2004 exclusive web version, and then the 2006 Sidewinder version.
So
why can't sit?
Okay, the last song on the album, there's a laughing sample that comes in of kids laughing.
Yes.
And I swear to you that it's exactly the same noise they use on Roller Coaster Tycoon. Like crowd noises.
Right? Yeah, the I totally know what you're talking about. Oh, that's hilarious.
I swear to you, because I've been playing the new, they've released the original Roller Coaster Tycoon on iOS for the iPad. I've been playing it a lot. And that noise was in my head. And when I heard them, I'm like, hey, my roller coaster is doing well.
That's funny. That's very funny. On the exclusive, so really the two versions, the big differences were just that the track list was released, was different between the two. One of them released via Sidewinder Records and actually in music stores, but the other one released online through their website as well as the late great Tower Records. I say late great Tower Records. I guess they're still around in some places, but not everywhere. The exclusive edition has five additional songs, including one of them called Tiny Lights, which was a song that was a B-side on to Every Time You Cry, but became, through concerts and performances and stuff, a big fan favorite. Like one of these songs, like, you know, we're doing this one for the fans because they're throwing little wadded up pieces of paper on stage saying, do Tiny Lights. So they re-recorded that, a new studio version of it, and included it on the web edition of Anytime Now.
Or maybe the crowd is just throwing LEDs up there.
Little tiny lights.
Yeah.
I see what you did there. In 2011, they came back one more time with the album Replay. Kind of a nice little bookend, right? Play deep, and then you end with Replay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And also for this album, Alan Jackman came back and returned for this last one. Universally, maybe it did well on college campuses, I don't know, but universally it was well received. A couple singles, California Sun and A Long, Long Time Ago. Gained some notoriety for them, released in mid-2011 ahead of the album. I'm looking to see if those charted, and it doesn't look like they did, but California Sun, a regional number one AOR chart hit, and a long, long time ago, which was reached number one on Worldwide FM Class X Radio's AOR chart. So it did, you know, did well, maybe not on the Billboard charts, but did well in other places. But that was about it on that one. In 2013, the band re-recorded vocals for Your Love and incorporated Morgan Page's reworking of the song and then released it. It was listed as a Morgan Page song that featured The Outfield, although if you go on to music services like Apple Music, it comes up as an Outfield release. I was surprised by that because it feels so much just like a remix single. I'm surprised that it was listed as an Outfield album.
Yeah. What I noticed about this album was that it sounded a lot like GTR. You know, the When the Heart Rules the Mind?
Okay.
It was, again, a couple guys from Yes coming out and doing a more of a guitar-based album.
Sure, yeah.
And this sounded a lot like GTR, except it was recorded in 2011 and 2013, or when was this? The 2011, The Replay. And the GTR came out in 1986. So it seemed like they were kind of stuck in the mid-80s with their sound.
It could, right. Yeah, which kind of lends credence to what we were saying earlier about creating this elaborate shell, but never really expanding past it, you know, and filling that shell to the max every single time, but never going beyond it. They released a couple of online bonus tracks, Malibu Beach and A Little Piece of Luck. And then sadly, just a couple of years ago in 2014, songwriter John Spinks died of liver cancer at the age of 60. So
now, did you do a cover story of them when this happened?
I didn't, no. And it would be really hard for me to do it because the only song anyone ever covers by The Outfield is Your Love.
So it'd be 2 hours of Your Love.
Oh, God, no, it would not. I'm sorry, I couldn't do it. But yeah, no, sadly, which is a bummer because I would love to hear people do versions of Every Time You Cry, Say It Isn't So, Voices of Babylon. There's so many great tracks.
Magic Seed.
Magic, maybe not so much Magic Seed. What a shonen knife cover of Magic Seed or something. Yeah, it's too bad that that's the biggest thing that they're going to be known for. And if people cover The Outfield, they're really just going to cover that one song.
Yeah. So Spinks made no bones about who his influences were, and we've kind of touched on many of them. He said that the Beatles were a huge influence. He said that Journey and Foreigner, who were contemporaries, were big influences on them. But also he said that Mr. Mister was a big influence on them.
And, interesting.
And in particular, he made reference to their first album that had like Broken Wing and Kyrie Alley.
Sure.
And knowing that, listening to this, it really did color how much Mr. Mister I heard, which was a lot of Mr. Mister
in
these albums.
That guitar bit in Kyrie that is like almost slipped into a little bit of Alan Parsons in there. But that's very similar to the kind of things you're hearing in the Outfields tunes for sure.
And like I said earlier, I mean, overall, when these guys were really on, they were on. And you couldn't deny that they had talent. But they also had a lot of kind of filler, white toasty kind of music in there, too, that just kind of blended in one after another.
There were times where I would be listening to this and doing what I usually do, which is focusing on the music, but taking care of some kind of mindless work in the background. And when I didn't realize that the album had ended, that's a sign that maybe those last few tracks weren't standouts.
Yeah, or that you're driving along like I was doing and you hadn't even realized that it started over. You're like, oh, I know the words to this one. You're like, oh, because that's track number three, and I've already heard this one twice.
Now, I got to thank a buddy of mine, Don, who as soon as I said that we were going to be doing The Outfield for Soundography, he said, oh, my God, I'm going to listen to that show. He actually, he's a fan of the band as well, and he, on a road trip, put together a mix of songs that weren't Your Love, right? And played them for me. And it was this thing where he didn't tell me who we were going to be listening to. And he says, all right, see if you can guess who this band is. And just from the vocals, I think I got it during the first song. But but it was a really enjoyable hour. And after we give our after he listens to this episode and he hears the songs I picked for my additional five, I'd be curious to see if any of those line up with his choices for the mixtape that he put together. Cause I don't remember, and this was a mix CD, not a mixtape, or actually a mix USB drive. Let's be honest. We don't do mixtapes anymore, sadly.
That is that's an art form that I was actually really good at. And I'm sad that it's an art form I no longer can use.
Yeah, it is.
Stairway to Heaven songs.
Sure. Yeah, boy, it's almost, we almost need to do, what's the second most popular song they do in concert?
Actually, why don't we just guess,
like, let's, cheating, right?
Let's guess the last one. You know I like my girls a little bit older. I just want to use your love tonight. I don't want to lose your love tonight.
What, the least frequently done song? Mm-hmm.
Let's guess they're
not. Oh, come on. It's going to be Magic Seed. No, it seems too difficult because it's going to be some like fan exclusive track. I'd say let's figure out the second most popular song. It's by, you know.
I'm going to say It Isn't So.
Oh, that's good. All right, I'm going to say Every Time You Cry.
Okay.
I think that's their... that's their closer before the encore. And you go out with a ballad like that.
And if we're wrong and it's not Your Love, then I'm leaving it in so people can make fun of us.
Okay. Number one song, surprise, surprise, is Your Love. This is interesting because they don't have a really big page on setlist.fm. They've toured since 1985, but they don't... So they must not be listing any of the UK pub stuff because it's four concerts in 85. I have a hard time believing that if they went on tour with Starship and Journey, that they only have four shows in 1985, 17 in 1986. So really, if you add all these up, 49.
So they might not be documented very well. Maybe I think that's the case.
Yeah. All right. Your Love, number one, of course. Number two, Say It Isn't So. Woo! Well done. Yep. Then we go to All the Love. All the love in the world. Sleep here all alone. All the love. All the love in the world. All the love. I'll be sending you. All the love. All the love in the world. Mystery Man. 61 Seconds, Voices of Babylon, and then number nine is Every Time You Cry. So really low on the list, lower than I was expecting to see.
On Diamond Days, they have a song, their lead-off track is Winner Takes It All.
Uh-huh.
And for years, their enunciation of all, yeah. I thought they were saying off.
Winner takes it off.
Mm-hmm.
Worst strip poker game ever. It's funny. They don't list the Wonderwall cover or the Led Zeppelin rock and roll cover, but setlist.fm does describe Message in a Bottle. There you go. There's the Police connection
Not
again.
Not surprising.
And I Saw Her Standing There, which is even less surprising.
Yeah.
Kind of surprising that this is the first Beatles cover that we've really... seen anywhere in the list from them.
Yeah. But the Message in a Bottle, totally in their yes. vocal ballpark.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. No kidding. It's that Just a Cast Away. Like perfect vocal range for Tony.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Very good. Well, let's get to our picks. Love this part of the show. I'll go first. These are five songs that typically you won't find on the greatest hits albums. Sometimes you will, and especially with shorter catalogs, it's really hard for us not to have a little bit of crossover in the Venn diagram, but you're going to see that in mine for sure.
I think we did okay.
My number two choice is clearly a greatest hits song. My number one, though, I mean, and this is no particular order. Number one is Part of Your Life from Babylon. It's, for whatever reason, that one struck me as the most 80s production tropes all jammed into one song.
It really is. I listened to it, I'm like, oh, wow. But when you said it's like all the 80s production tricks crammed into one song,
yeah.
I listened to it again, and you are so not wrong.
It really is. It really is like, here's everything they did in the 80s, all in one tune right here. Yep. Enjoy. Number two is Every Time You Cry. So yeah, here's my greatest hits track. I did include one, and this is just such a well done ballad. Mm-hmm. It's hard not to include it because it was. I'm not the one who talks about your hair. I'm not. For a band that did a lot of ballads and rockers, this set the bar, I think, for all those ballads.
Mm-hmm, it did. So how many times did you couple skate to this one?
I was trying to think. I'm sure it was played at one of the proms I went to. Mm-hmm. I would have been amazed if it wasn't.
Yeah, I'm sure I did either dancing, a slow dance, or an awkward couple skate to it at some point.
Right? Yeah, for sure. Number three is Jane. This is from Rock Eye. And, you know, the John Lennon song from the previous album is from Diamond Dogs is or Diamond Days.
Diamond Dogs.
Diamond Dogs. That's a David Bowie album. From Diamond Days is a. Is a spot-on Beatles tribute, but Jane is a very subtle Beatles tribute. Really, even not that subtle. I mean, they talk about Sgt. Pepper, and they talk about, there's about eight Beatles references in Jane. So,
and if you can name them all, you can win a prize.
Yes, you get a Soundography poker chip.
Sure.
Let's see. Next is Disraeli Years. Also got to say that one carefully because there's a Disraeli Years album. That one from the album Replay. And I picked it because it diverged from the very typical sound of, A-B-A-B arrangement that they had. The beat was unusual. The musical arrangement was different for them. And it really stood out to me as a really cool song.
Yeah.
And then lastly, One Night in Heaven, also from Diamond Days. Again, more Beatlesque lyrics. I think they even pull from Run for Your Life by the Beatles with You better hide your head in the sand, little girl, catch you with another man, little girl, something like that in there. There's definitely a Beatles reference there in One Night in Heaven.
All good choice. All great choices. So, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I picked John Lennon from Diamond Days. This is my favorite song that they did, and it still is. I was not suffering from musical nostalgia disorder. I remembered this song to be very good, and it still is. I picked 61 Seconds, which I guess is would be considered a greatest hit because it was ranked so high in their set list FM listing. But man, did this thing remind me of Men at Work.
Without a doubt, listening to it right now, it's you could hear right from the opening guitar melody, you can hear Colin Hay singing Be Good Johnny to it. Be good, be good, be good, be good, be good. Boy, I can't go. Hey, listen, Tony, do what you do with the going high. You do it very well.
I had a different song here. I think I had Somewhere in America. But then this morning when I was listening to it again, just kind of getting ready for the show, I decided I'd trade out for the Raintown Boys.
Sure.
And this is a song, and I still agree with what my note said, was that this started strong and stayed strong, and I love the way they use the harmonies on this one. And I feel like I did the right thing by switching it out, because Somewhere in America was just me kind of finding something on another album I liked instead of claiming a song I actually did like.
Well, it's funny because, all right, so you have two songs from Diamond Days. I had One Night in Heaven. I almost had Unrespectable for Diamond Days. Now, that's 4 out of 10 songs that we included or would have included on our playlist. So how can we say it's a bad album when there's, half of the songs ended up in our playlist? Almost ended up in our playlist.
Is it because of the diversity? I think it is, personally.
Yeah,
it is their most diverse album.
It is, yeah.
And I think that that might be why.
It's funny, though. It really is funny that we, that it was almost the one that we pulled the most stuff from.
Are we going to make that the link, the Amazon link?
No way. It's got to be a greatest hit. Okay, that's
all
easy.
Right, all right. Yeah.
That's easy.
All right. Then just remember, after the greatest hits, Diamond Days.
Go to Diamond Days, apparently. Go to half of Diamond Days.
Yeah. Just skip that magic seed.
Right.
Or don't play it in mixed company.
That's right. Play 1 through 4, 6 through 10.
And don't sing out loud in public places.
Right.
Number 4 for me was No Point from Voices of Babylon. I think again this might be a greatest hit. But the reason I picked this song more than anything else is I was at work doing some stuff and this song kicked in and made me stop and figure out what song this was and listen to it. And like you, I listen to it, but I'm doing other things. I'm working on paperwork or balancing numbers or whatever. And when something stands out, I'm like, okay, this is one that needs to potentially be on my list. And this one was one of those ones that said, hey, I'm singing and you pay attention to me.
That's cool. Well, it pulled, yeah, exactly. Pulled your attention away to get you.
Yeah.
I totally get
that.
And then
number 5, I picked California Sun, the kind of a brand new song for them. And it's newer, but it felt like it could have been on Play Deep. And it also, but the difference is that it sounded better. It was more clearly recorded. The production values were better. So it could not have been Play Deep, but it sounded like it kind of was channeling their Play Deep energy.
Yeah. One day, the California sun will come your way. Very good. I got nothing to contribute more on that.
No, I think we're good. I think we have now reached the end of our top 10.
No, that was great.
And it's the first time in a while that all 10 of our songs are going to be on Spotify, as they should be.
Good. Yeah. Good deal. And I think, you know what, let's throw Unrespectable also from Diamond Days on there. So I do have a bonus track, Diamond Days. Why don't you type that in there?
I got it.
Sir. Perfect. All right. Well, let's tell you about next week's episode of Soundography. If I sounded distracted a second ago, it's because I was looking it up. So we're not doing a band again, you know, like we did for one episode last season. We're doing this again for one episode this season, and we're picking a year and doing our favorite tracks from that year. Now, the year I'm talking about, and we might have songs from these albums, but we might not, include things like Nevermind by Nirvana, Out of Time by REM, Octung Baby by U2, Blood Sugar Sex Magic by the Red Hot Chili Peppers, Use Your Illusion 1 and 2 by Guns N' Roses. Look at all these great albums that came out in the year 1991.
Yep.
And we've already talked about Pearl Jam 10, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, and here's the thing about 91 is 91 started, I remember very vividly, starting with like hair bands up and down the charts. There was so much Aquanet on MTV, you had no idea what you were looking at. And
sure,
then when the year ended, it was all flannel and the Aquanet was dead.
Yeah, totally. What you've absolutely nailed it. Yeah. Metallica's first, or not first, but
their commercial breakthrough. Yeah. The commercial breakthrough.
Yep. Exactly.
And don't think I won't mention Enter Sandman at least once.
Okay. Well, that's fine. You can. 1981. Bring it on. So 1991, the very next episode here of Soundography. Hope you'll be here for that. If you want to get in touch with us, email us at scroll, soundographypodcast@gmail.com. You can find us at The Soundography on Twitter. For everything else, just go to soundography.com. You'll find everything you need there, archives of our past episodes, as well as links to where you can download the greatest hits album in most cases from these artists, as well as a Spotify link so you can listen to our playlists that go along with them. You can also contribute to our Patreon. We, of course, love that. And you know, download old shows, all that stuff. I know I said that already. I'm saying it twice. I think that's it. It seemed like I went through all that stuff really quickly.
It's okay. You can. You're a professional.
I am. Sometimes I'm so good. No, I'm kidding. I don't know how I was going to follow that up. But
nice. You named him twice. Ibit.
That's right. Exactly. So next week, be here for 1991, and we'll be here as well. On behalf of Hammond Chamberlain, this is Brian Ibit saying thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time right here on Soundography.
Dream Theater.
Show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.